Yeah, hang on. All right. Before we get started, one more request. Is Stephen Thomas here this morning? Doesn't appear so. Okay, thank you. All right. So, okay. Well, we got a little something different going on today. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that there is, believe it or not, the second test is next week, next Thursday, a week from Thursday. This second section in conservation is by far the briefest and has the least material covered of all the tests, of the three tests that you will take. And that's all, that's just the structure of the class. But then we missed today due to that snow, remember? And so I'm just chopping that lecture off, so that means even one fewer. So that means we'll have today, and we'll have Thursday, and we'll have Tuesday, and then we'll have the test on Thursday. This is a real opportunity, in a way, to have a less material to concentrate on. Same 30 questions, one chapter in the book to read. And so a lot of times the average does come up a little bit. Not everybody comes up from the first to the second, but it's an opportunity. I again urge you to participate in a study group if you can, and I urge some of you guys that made B pluses or A's on the test to lend your expertise to a study group or even organize it. You can get a room in the library, you can send out an email on the blackboard. It's very easy to do, and it'll help everybody. So with that, I want to introduce a topic today. First, I want to take a sip of my tea. All things kind of came down kind of quick today, so excuse me. All right, so actually this whole segment, I know that the last lecture in here was about foundations of conservation. It was kind of a perspective, wasn't it? But this whole, and then we had the ticks, and that was human wildlife stuff. But really the whole focus on the second section, and it really comes to into play today, is kind of news you can use. How you, as an individual, can interact with natural resources, and how you do interact, and how you might interact with natural resources. And what we're going to talk about today is, small woodlot management . Okay, and why does my clock keep going away? And then I make it small, and then when I switch over to that, it goes away. But anyway, small woodlot management. And let me just start out by asking this question. How many of you all have in your families some wooded rural land in Tennessee, some acreage of wooded land? All right, this is quite a lot. I mean, I'm guessing a third. And many of you who didn't raise your hand might aspire to, in your lifetime, if you live here in Tennessee, to acquire some wooded rural land. And so what I'm going to tell you today is something to keep in mind on how to manage, how you can take an active participation, an active role in that natural system, and have it produced to pay off for you. And we're talking, folks, dollars and cents. Now, before we get into the specifics of small woodlot management, I want to make a couple of points. First of all, Tennessee, all right, is mostly wooded. The majority of the state is actually covered with trees. This is not true of all eastern states, let me assure you. We're in a wooded state. It's over half the acreage in Tennessee are woods. And we're not down in the pine belt, are we? We're not in the southern coniferous forest. We're up here in the central hardwood forest. So that means what we have is we have hardwood forests for the most part. It's mostly hardwoods, that is, oaks, hickories, cherry trees, poplars, black walnut. These are the trees when you go into a furniture store or you go to pick out flooring for your house and you want real wood, don't you? You want real wood. And that real wood is wood that can come from Tennessee, that does come from Tennessee, domestic hardwood. Tennessee is one of the top, depends on what year you're looking, sometimes it's number one, but in all cases, it's one of the top hardwood producing states in the nation. Top hardwood producer. Okay, that means a lot of our domestic hardwoods come from Tennessee. I started at the bottom, so I'll go up. I'll rearrange those before I post them. So it's a top hardwood producing state. Now let's look at who owns these woods. Who owns the wooded land in Tennessee? So who owns the land in Tennessee is about 10% of that wooded land is under federal ownership. Okay, about is federal ownership. That is the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, the Cherokee National Forest, the National Wildlife Refuges, primarily in West Tennessee. Those are the federal holdings. The Defense Department also has some wooded land in Tennessee, in Middle Tennessee. And then there's about 10% of the wooded land is in state ownership. We have state forests. We have state wildlife refuges. We have state parks. And these have trees on them. So that's another 10% of the forest cover in Tennessee. And another 10% is large private. And this is actually decreasing. These are large private holdings. There used to be a big paper company in East Tennessee called Champion, owned a lot of trees. They gave it to the state. It's now Martha Sundquist State Forest. The Bowaters Group owns a lot of woods up on the plateau and runs that paper mill down at that you smell when you drive I-75 south to Chattanooga, down at the Hiawassee Crossing. And they still own a lot of woods in Tennessee. So about 10% are large private holdings. Well, that leaves folks, obviously, it doesn't take much high-powered math, to realize that leaves 70% of the woods in Tennessee owned by small private landowners. That is, you folks that raised your hand, right? Your dentist owns some, your doctor owns some, your neighbor owns some, you own some. You may be 50 acres, it may be 500 acres, but you got a little piece of the Tennessee woods. Now let's talk about the history of what's happened with that over the years. We've covered this a little bit in talking about the history of exploitation in North America, right? In other words, we have seen that in early settlement times during the 1800s, and it occurred here in Tennessee as well, we talked about it in the Smokies, the woods were largely cut over, weren't they? And yes, some of the wood was used. We talk about how it still is in the houses, the Victorian houses of Knoxville or Cincinnati, wood from Tennessee, original old growth timber. But we also know that a lot of that wood was just cleared and burned so that you could have farming. And then it turned out that, well, maybe Tennessee, certainly East Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, is not the greatest place to farm. And the farmers moved on, the big time agriculture moved on, and the state then grew up in these woods that cover it now. If you fly over Tennessee, you look down, you see, like I say, over half the state covered in trees. And most of that is owned by small landowners. What has happened since the reforestation after the deforestation of the, say, around 1900 was kind of a low point in terms of forestation? The trees grew back, as trees will grow back. And then you know what happened? They were, those small woodlots were not managed in any kind of intelligent way. No, in fact, manage is the wrong word. They were owned by owners who treated them with, let's say, benign neglect. Benign neglect. Okay, what do I mean by benign neglect? This is for the last century or more. Benign neglect has ruled how these small owners, how you or your neighbor or your uncle treated that land they own. Yeah, they loved the woods. Yes, they would maybe go hunting there in the fall. Maybe they have a little cabin. But you know what? Sometimes, you know, they had to pay the taxes on that land. There was a cost to land ownership. And maybe when the tax bill came due, you know, I don't really have that many $1,000s just to spend on that land. It's nice, I'm glad I have it, but I wonder if that land could pay for itself somehow. Oh, I know. I'll sell some timber. That timber is worth money. It's oak and other trees like that that have valuable value as saw timber. So well, they'd call up a logger, and the logger would go in and take what they could find. Take, well, not what they could find all the trees on your land, but they would go through the forest and they would take what was valuable, what was worth cutting, what they could sell at the sawmill. And then they'd come back and say, well, I've tagged the trees I'll pay you for. And then here's what I can offer. Yeah, I'll take it. They move back in there, they cut those trees, you pay your tax bill. That happened in 1950. It happened again in 1980. It happened again in 2005. And do you see what's happening? What's happening is the forest over the years is being high graded. High graded. High graded is a concept in forestry, but we're all familiar with it. If you've ever gone through a salad bar at 1:30 in the afternoon after the lunch rush, you have seen high grading at work in terms of the lettuce bowl, haven't you? Yeah, at 11:30, that lettuce bowl was full of all kinds of nice green lettuce leaves and all kinds of good stuff. And as everybody came through that line, they picked up the tongs and they took out what they wanted. They took out the best lettuce. And they left the stalks, the white parts, and the thick parts, and the yellow leaves. They left what wasn't valuable. And thus, the bowl, over time, becomes high-graded. And then when it's time for you to go get a nice, make a salad out of it, there's nothing there to eat. There's nothing there of any value to you. And that's the way Tennessee forests, for the most part, have been treated. The good is taken. The bad is left, the bad fills in where the good was. It's just nature takes its course. There's no management, there's no forethought, and as a consequence, the net worth of an acre of Tennessee forested land has declined over the last century. Even though timber prices have increased. And this is because of benign neglect. In this case, I don't know, benign might be too nice a word to use. It's pretty much just outright neglect and exploitation. But we're going to change that. Because you guys, when you own that land, when you have control, and some of you do right now. I gave this lecture a few years ago, and I had some guys come back to me after spring break and say, God, after you gave that timber value lecture, man, I went up there and I got borrowed my daddy's truck and his gooseneck trailer, and me and my brother took down some of those big old white oaks in the woodlot. You know, we got $2,000 for that timber. Of course, we blew out daddy's transmission too, so it kind of was a wash. But my point is, you guys are young. The whole thing with forest management is it takes decades. You got decades. I don't got decades. Your daddy may not have decades, but you've got decades. And so to the degree that you can start now and begin to reverse that benign neglect, begin to actually manage, improve that timber stand for the future, is a great opportunity. And this is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about timber stand improvement. All right? Timber stand improvement. What this means is that you've got this woodlot. It's been high graded. It doesn't have a lot that anybody wants to cut other than for firewood. And so, you know, what are you going to do? You just leave it like it is, you ignore it. And when you look like me, which is going to happen, it's going to happen quicker than you think, too. When you look like me, then it'll just be the same or worse. You'll pay taxes on it, but you won't get much monetary money out of it. You won't get much money out of it. So, but if you start now and you just do a few selective things early on, take a little care, then that forest will grow more valuable with time. Okay, for example, what kind of things can you do? Well, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple. Basically, timber stand improvement is just like, you know, you seed those radishes in your garden. Ever done that? Or your lettuce. And you see those little bitty seeds and you make a row. And it all comes up pretty quick and it's just a solid row of radishes and lettuce. There's zillions of those little plants. But if you just leave them, zillions of them, you won't get much of a crop, will you? The radishes will be teeny-weeny, the lettuce won't be very big. So what you've got to do is you've got to thin that row out to give each of those valuable lettuce plants the room, the sun, the water, the fertilizer to grow. And that's exactly what timber stand improvement is. It's basically forest thinning. Okay, take out the bad, leave the good. So, first of all, what's bad, what's good? Well, it's easier to say what's good. What's good is high value trees. And I don't have time to get into every species and all this. Well, what we're going to do today, like we do in a lot of our classes, is just hit the high points. If this interests you, if this is something you want to do with your land, you talk to your folks or whoever else is in on this, your brother, and then you end up maybe consulting a consulting forester or something, getting some good advice, talking to some extension people, and making some decisions, but they'll be along this line. You keep the high value trees, oaks, walnuts, black cherry, things that have a value as what we call saw timber, that is cut up into boards, or even if you really got a fine tree, veneer, even more valuable. You leave those. Well, what do you do with all the other stuff? The locusts and you know, persimmons and all these other little trees in there that are not doing you any good in terms of timber value in 40, 50 years. What you do with those is that you remove them. This is, after all, timber stand. So you remove, this means that you remove low-value trees. Dead and diseased trees, because they will never be worth anything. Now, I'm going to put an asterisk here, because we're going to come back to that. Dead and diseased trees and so-called wolf trees. Okay, so we talked about you have species that are nobody's ever going to pay you for. You have other species, and those low-value species are crowding up. They're taking nutrients and water and sunshine and shading. These high-value trees that would grow faster and grow more plentiful on your woodlot if they were removed from some of this competition. So you want to get rid of these low-value trees. You also, to some extent, want to remove dead and diseased trees. So I have an asterisk by this because you're after a balanced approach. You're not Bowater, right? You're not Weilhauser. You're not a tree company. You're not managing your land for maximum, well, maybe you are. Most of you won't. Most of you want to balance timber value and recreational and wildlife value. You want to have both. And you can have both. But they are somewhat opposing forces. You have the timber value of the tree that you're going to sell in 30, 40, 50 years. And then you have the wildlife habitat that you want to have in the here and now so you can view it or hunt it or whatever your inclination is. So and this is where that dead and diseased tree. Dead and diseased trees are worthless for timber value. They're worthless because they actually can become a place where fire from lightning strikes can start, called snags, those old dead snags. But those snags are tremendous resource for wildlife. You ever seen an old dead tree that's been there for 10-20 years? And it's riddled with holes, isn't it? And the pecker holes are all in it, and the big holes where the wood ducks and raccoons live are in it. The snags are wonderful for wildlife. So on a balanced management plan, you want to keep those snags, many of them, if not most or all of them, knowing that, yes, they're not going to provide any timber value, and if you're purely after timber value, you wouldn't keep them. But you're after wildlife habitat, too. And then the other thing you want to remove is wolf trees. What's a wolf tree? A wolf tree is a hog tree. It's a tree that branches, it's kind of like a shade tree. It's a great tree to have in your front yard. Did you know we're going on a field trip today? Did you bring your boots? He's got loafers. How are you going on a field trip in loafers, dude? Come on, man, I didn't tell you. That's why. Yeah, I knew I should have done something. Boy, that was hard. No, we are. We're just going outside here. We're not going far. But I want to teach you how to measure trees today. And so we're going to go out and at the end of class, we're not going to take a break. We're not going to have a quiz today. But we're going to learn how to use tree measuring tools. So I'm going to talk for a little bit. And then about break time, we're going to head out and do some tree measuring. So you learn how to do it. I want to give you the skills to be able to talk to a logger. But well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Wolf trees, when we go out there today and measure the nice spreading trees here in front of Alumni Memorial Building, really we'll measure them and we'll determine the board feet, but really those trees nobody would ever pay you for, which is President DiPietro probably wouldn't want to sell them anyway, but they're worth a lot more for their landscape value than for their timber value. But in a forest, a non-wolf tree grows straight and columnar because it has to compete with other trees alongside it. And then it branches out at the very height, and you can get lots of 16-foot logs before you come to a major fork or major limb. And that's where you basically have to... No sawmill is going to want to screw with limbs and forks. They want the trunk. The bigger the trunk, the more valuable the tree. Wolf trees are like shade trees. They branch out low down. You can't even get one good log out of it. It's not going to do you any good for timber value. It's fine in front of your house. It's fine shading your cabin on your rural land. But if they're out in the forest, if you remove that wolf tree, even if it's a high value tree, if you remove it, it's filled in by three or four more columnar growth hardwoods of equal value that'll end up being worth a lot more, okay, or exceeding the value of that wolf tree. Now you come, maybe you're starting to think, okay, he's saying remove this, remove that. How will we remove a tree? Well, the simplest way, really probably the only good effective way to do it quickly, is to basically poison them. And the way you do that, you can find out the details. I'm not going to cover that today. But you get some basically herbicide. It's sold for this purpose. You take your axe. When you find a tree that you don't want, you want to remove, a low value, a wolf tree, then you girdle around. Remember girdling? Cut around it. But you're not going to just let the girdle try to kill the tree with the girdle itself. You just kind of partially girdle it, and then you spray the herbicide into the cut, into the living cambium of the tree. And then that will go up both to the leaves and to the roots and will kill the tree. And then you basically turn that into a snag. If it's small, don't worry about it. It'll fall over and rot pretty quickly. If it's bigger, you can leave it for wildlife. Remember, it's not using water anymore. The leaves are gone. It's not using sunlight. It's not really competing anymore with your high-value trees. Or, if you need a little money right now, and you've got the resources to do it without getting yourself hurt, you can cut it down and chop it up for firewood. Firewoods, I saw out in front of Mayo's, is going for, almost $200 a cord. A big old wolf tree you can get lots of cords out of. It's a lot of work. You're really paying for the work to cut it and split it and all of that. Also, a caveat. We're having some real problems in Tennessee, especially, with introduced forest diseases. We don't move firewood. If you can sell firewood in the county in which you cut it. If you're going to move it, let's say, well, I live my land's out in Grundy County. They don't want any firewood out there. I got to bring it to Chattanooga or someplace to sell it. Well, check with the state forester and make sure that you're not moving it from a quarantined county, because you as a forest owner of all people do not want to waste your forest that you've worked so hard now to get on the right track by having it come down with some deadly exotic disease. So that's what you do. You spend the next 5 years doing a little management activity, taking a month every summer. It's like hell, it's fun. You're young, you get out there with your buddy, camp on the land, poison a few trees, take down a few more for firewood or whatever. And when you do remove a trunk for firewood, pile up, you got a limit, right? Pile up the limbs on the ground to make a brush pile. That's great for wildlife. All right, see, you're both enhancing timber value and wildlife value when you do that. And so as you make these changes, then it's like And it's like a damn, 407K. But with wood, it's even better. It's a commodity. You've been hearing how commodities in this growing world are what's really valuable and in short supply? And you don't own an iron mine, do you? You don't own a copper mine. You don't own an oil well. Maybe. Maybe you do. But what you do own is a woodlot. And it's got a valuable commodity, a renewable commodity on it, that hardwood lumber. And by taking these little bit of timber stand improvement effort now, you're good to go into the future. So what happens? You live your life, you do your career, you marry or whatever, you raise your kids if you're going to do that. You visit the land, you enjoy the land, you see those oaks getting bigger, those walnuts getting bigger, and then when you need your first kid goes to college, or you're thinking about retirement, or something comes up when you need some serious money. I'm not talking like $100, folks. We're getting to that. I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars on relatively small areas of land. All right, we're doing good. Okay, we're talking about you can have the current average price for hardwood lumber, just to give you an idea of it, is, it can be, if it's good quality, good quality saw timber. Can go for $500 in MBF. All right, $500 in MBF. You can have many MBF on an acre, depending on how well managed you started out doing this forest. It is not uncommon for the best hardwood woodlots in Tennessee to bring, when they're logged, as much as 5,000. To $10,000 an acre. You own 250 acres. I'll let you do the math. This is serious money. If you take it now, and plus, it's not just money. You're not taking it forever. It'll grow back. You can even do selective cuts where you remove a little bit of patch here and a little bit of patch there and a little bit of patch there and take your money over decades and even make the deer hunting better. Okay? And some serious money. Now, when it comes time to sell this timber, you need to know what the hell you do. You got a lot of money here. You don't want to be a dummy about it. You want to be a little savvy. It's like when you go take your car in, right, to get it fixed. If you don't have a clue of what the hell's going on with automobile repair, then you're at the mercy of the mechanic, aren't you? You hope you get an honest one, because you could get fleeced from here to there and back. But if you know a little bit, can talk the talk, you're going to keep them honest, even if they would have an inclination to maybe pad your bill a little bit. And the same with the logger. Loggers are good guys, but it's a tough business, and it is a business, and they're going to offer the least amount of money they can for the best logs that they can. Because, see, that's how loggers make money. They pay you for standing timber. They do the work and the risk of cutting it and moving it to the sawmill. And then the sawmill pays them what the log is worth to the sawmill. And then so on up the economic chain. But that's where the logger takes his cut. And so you want to make sure you know what he's doing and how to talk the talk, and you know what the going price is per board foot or 1,000 board feet. And that's what he's going to be talking in, and you're going to be able to even measure your own woods after today. We're going to get to that here right now. So let's talk a little bit about how you measure wood. Because when you get to selling, after you've grown all this great wood, and you want to make your $500,000 in timber sales, you're going to need to negotiate with a logger. And you got to know what you've got to sell. You got to be able to count it. Now, first of all wood is sold in board feet. Okay? Board feet. A board foot is a simple concept. It's a board that's 1 inch thick. It's the amount of wood in a board that's 1 inch thick and 1 foot square. Say you cut a foot off a 1x12. That's one board foot. You cut a foot off a 2x6. That's a board foot. And so on. Now, that's not a whole lot of wood. It's only 144 cubic inches, right? A board foot is 144 cubic inches of wood. That's not a whole hell of a lot, but we talk not in board feet. When we're talking about forests and harvest, we're talking about MBF. The M in this case doesn't stand for millions. Don't get that confused. It stands for milli, as in millimeter. Or if you know anything about taxation, sometimes the tax rate is in mills of a dollar. There's no such coin, but there's a concept. What it is a thousandth of a dollar, a tenth of a penny. That's what a millimeter is, a thousandth of a meter. That's what MBF is, 1,000 board feet. Got it? 1,000 board feet. So what we're talking about, we're selling timber in MBFs. Now, the question becomes, how do we know? There's two ways. Let me take it one more step. There's two ways to sell your lumber. You can sell as stumpage. That's probably how you will. That's one price. That's a lower price for you. You own the tree. Got it? Or you can earn a delivered price. That is, you take the profit of the logger and deliver it to the sawmill yourself. That's what those boys from the farm did in my class a couple years ago and blew out their daddy's transmission, right? They got the higher price because they delivered the log. But for most of you all, and most landowners, that's a place you're not going to go. You're going to pay a pro to do that part. So you're going to be selling stumpage. And what that means, stumpage, is the amount of wood standing on the stump in your forest that of a quality species that the logger is willing to cut and fool with. And so how does the logger know what to pay you for your stumpage? He's going to cruise your timber. He's going to go through your woods. He's going to look for he's going to measure the trees. And he's going to say, that's a good, that one I can sell. How many board feet can I get out of that? Okay, it looks like about that much. About this one, this. And he will go through your entire woods and he'll know exactly what he's going to be able to deliver. And then he knows what he's going to get as a delivered price. He knows how much he wants to make for all this good dangerous effort of cutting these trees, hauling them off. And he will make you an offer. Now, since you know how to do it, you're going to be able to, you've already cruised your timber. You know what you got. You know if he's bullshitting you, right? So let's move over to this. I'm going to show you how to measure your timber. All right. So these here, what I'm going to show you, this looks like a yardstick, but it's not. It's a tree stick. You know what? A lot of things are made out of plastic. There will never be a plastic tree stick, I assure you. Okay. Now, the tree stick's complicated, and I want you to be able to use it. You will be asked to use it on the test. So that's why it's good that you familiarize yourself today with it. Now, it's got numbers all over it. Okay? And it's got writing on all the sides. It's got a tree scale side. It's got a log scale side. They look pretty similar. Okay? Log scale, tree scale. You want to use the tree scale. The log scale is for the guy at the sawmill to use. He'll actually measure, it's a little more accurate, he'll actually measure the cut stump and get a little more accurate board feet. But you'll get almost as accurate measuring the living tree. See what you're doing here, do you get the concept? You're going to be able to tell me how many thousands of board feet are in a living tree without ever doing any more than touching it. So here's how it works, folks. You've got the diameter of the tree in inches at breast height. Loggers always, and timber cruisers and foresters always work at breast height because they don't want to be stooping down low or reaching up high. And so it's for the average height person. It's you just reach out comfortably. It's where it's easy to hold a tree stick day after day after day. You hold it out, it's so many inches off the ground standardized, but it doesn't really matter for this purposes. You just hold it out at 25 inches from the eye. That's an easy arm's length. You don't go like that, you don't go like this. You hold it like this, okay? Then, let's get a tree. Can I put this tree? Here we go. There's my tree. So I come up to my tree with the tree scale side, not the log scale. And I come up breast height, 25 inches, turn my head straight ahead, right? Don't go like that. Don't go like that. Just looking straight at the tree. Visually, I line up this blank end, this tree stick end, the little hole in it, with the edge of this, visually line it up with the edge. And then I visually line up the mark here, and what I get is I get between what I'm getting when I visually line up the other edge with the outside of the bark, I'm getting between around 14 and 15 here. So what does that tell me? That tells me, even though I didn't drill through the tree to determine the diameter, but this will estimate diameter. So I estimated the diameter across the garbage can. But more importantly, if this garbage can was a tree, I could estimate the number of board feet it contains. So if I've got, say, 15 inches, 15 board feet, then I got to determine how many 16-foot logs I have. The way you do, you can cut smaller than 16, but 16 is the ideal log. Because you ever go to the lumber yard, what's the longest board you can buy? 16 feet. So lumber sawyers like to work in 16-foot lengths if they can get them. And so that's what they prefer to buy. Now, what's the 16-foot log? It's from as low as you can cut it at the stump with your chainsaw all the way up till it gets to about 8 to 10 inches in diameter for hardwoods. Or you get some big old terrible branching wolf tree thing, and that means they can't use the limbs, only the trunk, So that's how many logs I get. Now, how do you determine number of 16-foot logs with your stick? Well, actually, there's a way. You look on this, which is the merit hypsometer. Shit, you're learning stuff today, man. What does this say? How do you use a merit hypsometer? Stand 66 feet from the... Whoa, shit, what's this fucking Walk of the Beast crap going on here? Right? No. Why is it 66 and not some more holy number like 50 or something? Anybody know what's magic about 66? And it's not the devil. Come on, somebody knows. What's 66 feet? Two-thirds. Two-thirds of 100. Right. Anybody ever do any surveying? Horizon mark? How about a chain? It's a chain. A chain is it's a measuring chain. It's an old-timey way of measuring landscape. And a chain is 66 feet. Arcane, but that's the way it's come to be. So what you do with your merit hypsometer, you step off 66 feet from the tree, you plumb the stick at 25 inches, same as you did before, and put this end with stump height and read number of 16-foot logs where you get to the where you can't use it anymore. So we pace off 66 feet, we do the easy arm, we put it down at the stump, one, hey, two logs, right? Two logs. It's all done by like geometry, folks. Your favorite subject in school. All right, so, but you don't have to do the geometry because all you got to know is two 16-foot logs. You read across. It's just a little table. You come down from 15-inch diameter at breast height, 96 board feet. You got it. You know how much wood is in that tree. And if it's selling, if it's a top quality hardwood and it's selling for $500 a thousand, how much money you get out of that tree? $50. An easier way to do it, $500 a thousand, just move it over three places. 55.5. Or 50 cents, $0.5, 50 cents per board foot. So, yeah, it's a 100 board feet's a $50 tree. And you say, well, shit, that's not much. Yeah, but that's a small tree. And you got thousands and thousands of those trees. It's going to work out, guys. It's going to work out. And you're going to make some money. Now, let me show you. I got one other little trick up my sleeve. This is something else you can use to measure your forest. Somewhere, here it is. Seems like I could have got this out before right now. There it is. This is called a D-tape. It's a metal tape. It's got a vicious looking hook on one end, all right? And you put it around the tree, right? You put it around the tree. Remember I said this was 15 inches? I put it around the tree. This is actually a little more accurate than the tree stick. Uh-oh. I said it was between 15 and 14. What is closer to? Can you see, guy? Can you see, Marcus? What's this say? 14. Okay, so it's a little more accurate. Now, wait a minute. How can you measure around the tree and know the diameter? The diameter is across the top. Now there's another side where I can measure across the top. Shit! Sure enough. You know, 14 inches. So that's working pretty good. But how did I do it on when I put it around? Look at this. Look at that inch. What the fuck? How's that an inch? They're saying this is an inch. You know, there was a time when females, girls, didn't score as high on math as boys did. You know? Now that's, they've caught up. But nobody understood it at the time, see? Because the girls, they were just as smart. Hell, they worked harder. Yet they scored lower on that math test. And then somebody realized what it was. Well, shit. These poor girls, they've been hearing since they were 15 years old that that's 8 inches. All right. Now, girls, you got the revenge. You got revenge. You take your hook. You hook them in. All right. And you measure it. And you say, I got my ruler here and it looks like about 1 3/4 inches. Huh? No, nobody did tell me. How is that an inch?
Pi.
It's pi inches. It's 3.14 inches. So it's, you measure the circumference and call 3.14 1 and you read out in inches. You don't have to use your calculator. Pretty clever, huh? All right, now what are we going to do? You're going to be on your toes. Because I have yet to poke out anybody's eye, and I don't want to poke them out today. So we're going to go outside. I got a dozen of these sticks. We're going to go right outside here. We're going to find a tree. You're going to work. Everybody that wants to see a stick and learn how to do this, because it's going to be on the test. This is your opportunity. I want the sticks back. I got a dozen of them. Okay, here you go, guys. Look up. Look bright. It's coming at you. Over here. It's like t-shirt night. Hey! Over here. Hey, t-shirt night that could blind you. Ah! You gotta catch them, guys. Here on the front row, quick.
Yes, sir.
Ah! I can't throw worth a shit. Here, let me hand out a few more of these. We'll meet you outside on the lawn, guys. Want one more? How about back here, guys? Y'all didn't get many. How about you? All right, I'll be right out there.